Hello, you're listening to the Boom Burst Podcast. Today, we invited a special guest to talk to us about indie dev and crowdfunding. Cue the music. Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming. I am your host for tonight, Dozer, and with me I have our wonderful co-host...
It is Fleet, and I'm actually here talking about something a little bit different this time, because I am talking about Barricade Games, which I'll talk about a little bit more in a minute.
Yes, she's not just here as our wonderful co-host, but also as a representative of Barricade Games. We also have our special guest here. If you've listened to our KMSC radio show Technical Disaster, you should remember him. We've got Corey from the Nerd Queue.
What's up, guys? I'm glad to be here. I'm pretty stoked to be on the Boom Burst Podcast.
Oh yeah, where nerdery is awesome.
I love it.
Yes. So anyway, Corey, you have the Nerd Queue, which is another podcast. Why don't you just tell our listeners what that is and what you do?
Okay. The Nerd Queue is a podcast that is centered around independent video game development in the Midwest. I'm based currently out of Fargo, and a lot of the local networking I do is to bring about a reckoning, I suppose, or an influx of independent video game development on the local scene. At the same time, I try and cover as many Midwest games as possible. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's pretty cool stuff. And it seems like you're expanding recently because I know you've built a website.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we put up the blog, but it's actually going to be going under a redesign. I'm going to be working with a local company, Hash Interactive, to put together a custom website that houses everything that I need, from the podcast hosting to being able to show affiliates and sponsors and people that are participating and contributing as well.
So that'll be pretty fun. Awesome. I'll need to actually talk to you about that later, because that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it'll be intense. And then I start my crowdfunding middle of June.
Okay, so. Cool. We'll get into that a little bit later. And Olivia, you're here not just as a Boom Burst co-host, but also as Barricade Games. So tell us, what is Barricade Games and what do you guys do?
Yeah, so Barricade Games it's really, right now, it's just me and my significant other who I live with, and we're both super into game design. And what it really is it's just kind of a name for ourselves to design games under. So we've been independently working on a digital game as well as a tabletop game. It's a little bit of both. And we've recently taken on the big scary world of crowdfunding. So that's a thing. Mm-hmm.
And your crowdfunding campaign is actually what inspired today's episode. So let's really get into the meat of the topic here. I've called this the loaded question of the episode. And that is crowdfunding essential to modern indie development? You two can take that from here.
Olivia, I think you should go first. I mean, like, you're actively in it.
All right, so this is definitely a loaded question, because the word essential just has so many connotations, right? Because, I mean, indie development happened before crowdfunding was a thing. It's really more of a thing, like, this decade. But it's really allowed indie development to completely take off, right? Like, all of a sudden, it's something that anybody who's had any, like, idea or project they've been working on, it's actually a possibility now. And it has many different connotations to tabletop games and video games. And I assume we're mainly going to talk about video games, even though my project's a tabletop one. So with tabletop games, it's a little bit different, because when you have that situation, you're dealing with a lot of different things like manufacturing, contracting, fulfillment, distribution, that sort of stuff. And one reason I'd be tempted to say that it's not essential to indie development is that a lot of the time that stuff is kind of outsourced anyway. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's the sort of... And And if it's not successful, if you won't get picked up by a publisher, a lot of the times it's not necessarily a game that's going to be super successful on Kickstarter. Whereas with digital games, since they're so easily distributed, just about anybody can put their game out there, get a little bit of support for it, and get it made. But one reason I would say it might be a little bit more essential is because of the marketing aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Getting it in front of people's eyes and getting an audience, and Kickstarter is a really good way to do that.
I feel like it's also a relatively good judge of if there's an audience out there for your product.
Exactly. And so that's one thing. It's also it's really cool because it's low risk for backers in a lot of ways. Like in some ways it is, in some ways it isn't, because of the fact that if it doesn't succeed, their money don't get charged anything for it. Essentially, it's just like they can back it. But there's been a lot of instances of that going really, really wrong. So yeah, there's just so much tied up into it. I don't know. I guess is the simple answer to that question.
That's a reasonable answer, because I really couldn't say either. Corey, what's your weigh-in on the situation here?
From what I've seen, crowdfunding is one of the easier routes you can go as far as funding games. Much like Olivia said, essential. I don't think it's essential. I don't think it's one of those necessary things for indie developers to have to do. Excuse me. Crowdfunding to make their dreams or make those games happen. There are tons of other ways that could be seen as being held more accountable. They can try and pitch for investors. They can try and work and save their own funds to make that happen, or at least get an initial test product out. So I wouldn't, on a personal level, from what I've seen, I wouldn't classify it as essential. If it's huge costs that you're trying to reach, I would say trying to do crowdfunding to see if there's a palette or a taste or like a specific demographic of people that are interested in that game. That's definitely something that it could be used for to get towards the in-game product. And plus, from the marketing aspect, you can use that Kickstarter to be spread through press outlets. The NerdQ always keeps the door open just in case people want to have us put up the crowdfunding campaign. And reaching out to press with a crowdfunding campaign, you can see if certain press outlets are going to pick it up as well.
Well, because the thing is about doing it that way rather than doing it, I guess more traditional way, is the immediacy of it, right? Yeah. So if you can say, I back this on Kickstarter, you know, people feel more like they're a part of it.
Right.
So that has a lot to do with it as well, while getting it out there is a good marketing tool. Yep. But like you're talking about big amounts, this is actually pretty relevant to me right now, because my project is a tabletop project, and I really severely underestimated the amount of work it would be and the amount of money I would need to raise. And that's one thing that I think is much more accessible to digital games, even though tabletop games is probably the biggest category on Kickstarter. I know for sure it's the biggest category on KickTrack, which is a website that's designed to work with Kickstarter for analytics. But it's also a big part of it. So it's interesting to think about who uses it and why. But I do think it's hard to say whether or not it's essential or not. I personally am a big advocate for it, to be completely honest, just because I don't know about you guys, but I really get kind of a rush from backing something and then feeling like I helped make it possible, you know? But there's a lot of arguments against it.
Yeah, well, I feel like tabletop gaming is such an interesting avenue for this new resurgence of indie game dev, and it's opened up so many doors for so many other people, because I spend more time playing board games than I do video games, which is super interesting now, because I always figured that I'd be playing more video games than board games. So it's more fun. So I think more people are always willing to support board games over video games because of that community aspect, because we don't have couch co-op anymore. And that's the closest thing we get to that.
Well, and there's also the physical aspect of it, right? Like, you're getting something actually shipped to you. And I mean, some people probably disagree that having something analog is kind of more fulfilling, especially in a situation like Kickstarter where you are trying to help it come to fruition.
I don't know. I'm a huge supporter of the board game genre. I'm actually planning on starting a segment that deals with board games and tabletop games that we're going to be recording, hopefully, when I get back from my trip to Michigan next week. So I'm really looking forward to that, like super looking forward to sitting down and playing some board games for about 4 weeks straight. I mean, like, there's something about it. I mean, like, and I think it really started with Cards Against Humanity coming back, like, out, because that really spurred people to actually sit down, look each other in the eye, have conversation, laugh, and then games like Ticket to Ride or Secret World, and, like, there's just so
Secret
many.
World. You mean Small World?
Is it? Oh, Small World. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the one. And, like, I started playing Small World with my brother when he picked it up, and he ended up getting all the expansions because we just had such a fun time playing it with the starter set. Mm-hmm. So I try to support as many, like, tabletop Kickstarters as possible, because why not? I like sitting around with my buds, you know, like, playing a tabletop game, having a good time, and laughing.
Mm-hmm. But I'm going to take a second to kind of look at it more from a consumer standpoint for a minute, though, when we're looking at crowdfunding. Because I know that it's a lot different from developers and from consumer standpoint. Because from a consumer standpoint, you're backing this product. You may or may not have experience shipping and fulfilling and doing whatever you need to do. And for a lot of people, it feels like they're throwing their money away, or they're spending their money on something they're not going to see for a year or 2 years or something like that. So, so in a lot of ways, it's hard to attract people to a crowdfunding campaign, especially if it's not something really flashy. And that's one thing that a lot of people that are developers in tabletop games in particular, but I'm sure in video games as well, if it's not flashy, it won't sell on Kickstarter, because it has to be something that gets their attention and holds it. And in some ways that excludes certain types of games. Because, like, for example, my game right now is an abstract strategy, and that's not really something a lot of people are super into in general, especially, you know, it doesn't have a lot of cool pieces. It has some decent art, but it just doesn't have the same crowd appeal. And so using a platform like Kickstarter for me is about my only option, and for me it's also a really hard platform for me to use effectively because of the audience. So,
you know, I just need to say this has been the easiest episode for me to host ever.
Well,
you two are doing all the work.
Yeah, well, I think it's mostly because, like, we both host or co-host, like podcasts respectively. I mean, that's what happens when you get people that know how the game rolls. You know what I mean? It's so much fun to podcast with people that do podcasts already.
It's
like you don't need to lead any conversation because they know, like, you know, the cues just, and stuff, like when to hop in.
It just
which makes
flows.
It, I think, more fun.
Like, I'm just sitting back in my chair like, I don't need to do anything. I don't need to steer the conversation. And from what I've gathered for my loaded question, you've given me, I think, a really concrete answer despite your kind of vagueness in approaching it. And it's that it's not essential, but it is incredibly beneficial.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
So you don't need it, but not having it, while not necessary, and for some projects it probably isn't a good idea, but it can very for the projects that it's good for, it's super beneficial.
Exactly. Like, I mean, just looking at some of the... But the thing is that there's also a lot of people that kind of use the platform that don't really need to. I feel like because of the marketing capability of the platform, and there's been a lot of discussion about this with things like really recently the Dark Souls board game. Now,
yeah, I'm a bad host right now because I wanted to look into that.
But no, it's super interesting. I'm not saying it's a bad game. Like, don't get me wrong at all. But what I'm saying is that because Kickstarter is kind of meant to be for indie developers, and then this giant monster of a game shows up that, like, if we're being honest, like, do you think that they needed the funds from their Kickstarter campaign to make the game? No, they did not. They had the Dark Souls IP. The game was going to get made and it was going to sell, but it was just a marketing tool for them. And a lot of people are really bitter about it. A lot of indie designers that rely on it. The fact that they are kind of abusing this platform because of the image that it has of like supporting something, even though it's not necessarily something that needs supported. But as far as indie development, like that's still like that kind of lends to the same thing that you just said, that it is really helpful for indie developers. But it's also really helpful for anybody that wants to use it. Like, I mean, as much as crap as I have to say about it, like, it's been an excellent tool for them in getting so much more support for this Dark Souls board game as a pre-order. They're at, what, like $2 million right now?
Yeah.
Something like that? It's absolutely insane.
Well, so the game got funded in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Funded in 3 minutes. I feel like that's record breaking. And from that developer's standpoint, in the day and age where the TV is pretty much the radio and your cell phone is now the new color TV, it's hard to cut through the noise of like television because everybody Netflix and chills. Like it's all Netflix, like no commercials. I don't want to see that stuff. And I guess I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit here, but the only way for them to really just like get that attention for a board game, which is essentially unheard of from like a top tier developer for a top tier game, it's unheard of for those kinds of people to make board games. Like you make video games. That's all you do. You video game, you don't board game.
Well,
so
the thing is that they just lent the IP to a different company. They didn't actually make the game.
However, but still, like having that IP behind it, like any board game made with the Dark Souls IP would have been able to be produced. There were the backers, like there were producers already behind it. But one thing that I think is really interesting about this Dark Souls thing specifically is that I think on one end, I can definitely see where other indie devs are bitter about what happened. But one thing that I like about the Kickstarter platform and any other kind of crowdfunding is it creates an intimacy between the consumer and the producer.
Oh, absolutely. That's one reason why I really love it so much. Because like I said, even though it's something big like this, and actually, by the way, I lied earlier, it's at $3,782,000.
Right? You were off by like almost $2 million.
Yeah. So I mean, that was last time I checked it. So, and even though it's this wildly successful game, a backer that backs it still feels like they're a part of it beforehand, and still gets to see the updates and make comments and see the changes to the page and gets exclusive rewards, which is one thing that is really interesting about the Kickstarter platform is the prevalence of like exclusiveness, which is one reason why it's a good thing for indie developers to attract an audience.
It's about building that community. Like at the crux of it with crowdfunding, it's about the crowd.
I don't want to interrupt, but I am watching time here.
That's
on that aspect of the crowd, I think I should move to our next question, if that's okay.
Well, I do have one thing to say about that, because that's just really relevant. Because one thing that a lot of people, myself somewhat included, don't quite understand about Kickstarter is that you actually, it's not just for creating that crowd. it's for utilizing an existing crowd, right? So it's essentially for finding bringing attention to an audience that was already looking for it, or bringing together people that were already supportive of it. Because one thing that a lot of Kickstarter project creators don't really understand is that you have to have a fan base ahead of time or it's not going to succeed. Not only does it essentially you have to have a crowd to create a crowd, but that's exactly what it does. Mm-hmm. The platform. So
yeah.
Just wanted to add that thing.
No, that's fine. It leads into my next thing. When crowdfunding and gaming is brought up, like, Kickstarter is one of the first things that comes to mind. Like, specifically, yep. The Kickstarter platform is arguably one of the best. And so my question is, especially to you, Fleet, because you've been dealing with it for these last few weeks, mm-hmm. is it the best or is it just the most known? And on top of that, does being the most known indirectly make it the best?
Definitely what you just said.
Okay.
So, and I wouldn't say it's strictly the best. It's probably the best for the most projects. Mm-hmm. But there are reasons to use some of the other platforms like Indiegogo and so forth. Because what the main difference is the number of eyes on your project. Because Kickstarter is by far has much more traffic of people just browsing and looking for cool stuff to back than Indiegogo or any other crowdfunding site. It's by far the best.
Mm-hmm.
Enough to where if you need any significant amount of money or if there's a minimum you have to reach, you basically have to use Kickstarter. Because the main interesting thing about Indiegogo is that you can create flexible funding campaigns, which essentially means that... because the thing about Kickstarter is if you don't hit your goal, you don't get anything.
Yeah.
But with Indiegogo, you can set it in such a way to where you can set a goal, but then however much you get, you still keep. And for some types of projects, that's disastrous. Like for a board game, for example, if I don't make 8,000, I can't make the game happen at all. So you have to have a minimum, and so it still works that way on its own. But with Indiegogo, it works differently. So,
mm-hmm.
But there is a reason why Kickstarter is popular. It's popular because it's popular, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll get into that like minimum thing a little bit later. Now, there's one thing specifically towards you, Corey, because I think you had an episode where you talked to, and I may be totally wrong on this, but did you talk to a new crowdfunding platform for indie games?
I was talking about a new one. It's called Game Kicker, and I knew it was going to come
I've
up.
I've heard that, actually, yeah.
I knew it was going to come up, but it works on the same principle as Kickstarter. It's all or nothing funding. So if you don't hit your goal, your game doesn't get funded.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. But it's a platform that was essentially set up for just games. That was it. It didn't want to include like art or comics or like tech. It wanted to literally cut through the noise and solely focus on games. And unfortunately, I was just looking at the website, it doesn't have very many games on it.
Mm-hmm.
They literally have the same games that were on there when I first checked it out as they do now. So I don't know what's going on with the project. It actually makes me question and
mm-hmm.
become a little bit more curious about what's happening. So thanks for pointing that one out, because I'm going to do a little follow-up with those guys to try and see what's going on with their mm-hmm. project.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing about that is that I feel like creating a new platform at this point with how prevalent Kickstarter is going to be a very slow process.
Yeah.
But I could foresee something like that being geared toward a specific medium, being successful in some degree and being able to do some things that cater to their creators in ways that Kickstarter can't. So...
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, what I could honestly see in some way is it kind of it having the Google approach being taken, where a bigger crowdsourcing company like Kickstarter, say, purchases it.
Right.
And then kind of moves all of their gamers all of the game development just to that one specific platform to it. So if someone comes to, like, you know, instead of someone coming to Kickstarter looking for games, they can just get redirected to, what's it, GameKicker?
Yeah,
GameKicker.
Yeah, GameKicker.
You know, yeah. I mean, they even have the same kick root word to it, so I could definitely see something like that being plausible.
Well, I mean, overall, like, acquisition, I think, might be the best way for it. Mm-hmm. Because without that acquisition, I don't think they're going to get the type of attention that they want, or let alone need. Because
at least, at least not in the near future, as long as I'm going to say, yeah.
Right.
And I think that comes back to the core thing with these platforms that exist. The best one is the one that has the most traffic.
Yep.
Yeah, essentially. And outside of just the most traffic, it just really just depends on what you're looking for. Because with Kickstarter being all or nothing, and for projects such as Olivia's, where you need that 8,000 or you're not going to make your game. Like, if you don't get that 8,000, that's it. You have to use something like Kickstarter because, 2,000 would be great, but 2,000 based on, like, the projected time you want to launch may not cover it. But I'm even still, I suppose, like, I always think in the realm of, even if I have a little bit, I can make a lot out of a little. So I'm always optimistic. So, I mean, like,
of course,
even if you guys don't make the goal, I'm definitely going to pull for your abstract strategy game. I'll definitely look it up. I'll definitely be looking at it, and I'll definitely plug it on my Facebook page.
I knew about this game ahead of time, and I'm going to be totally honest with you, Olivia. I looked at it, I'm like, okay. You're making it, that's cool, so I'll be supportive because my friend's making it. Then I saw the Kickstarter page and the video and the actual footage of things, and I'm like, oh my, this actually looks fun. Like, this is something that I legitimately want to play.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you.
You know, once I saw it in action, you know, because before I was just being the supportive friend. Now I'm looking at it more of a consumer. gimme, now.
Yeah.
You know, because I like abstract strategy kinds of games, and when I saw how simple it was on the surface, my brain just started rolling, and I'm just like, ooh. But we'll get into a bit that we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, because one last thing on this crowdfunding topic is, even with crowdfunding being a thing, it's still really hard for a lot of projects to get backed, and that's kind of been, you know, the whole crux of this discussion indirectly. You know, costs get really high, especially if you're creating something that's physical and analog, like a board game. You know, a lot of them getting into $1,000. So this really gets back into the, if you don't make your set goal, nothing happens. In which case, this is a question for you, Fleet. So your goal is 8,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you get 7,600 backed, nothing happens.
Pretty much.
You're like, that's so close, and nothing would happen?
Mm-hmm. That's the way Kickstarter works. It's,
what if you
it's
were,
a
like,
floor.
A cent off?
I mean, well, see, the thing is about that is that technically you're not supposed to bolster your numbers, but you could be like, hey, Mom,
give me a dollar.
Can I have a dollar? Like,
just go here, pledge a dollar, you'll get your name in the
button.
Thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, you get someone, get a friend.
So, I mean, there are ways to fudge it, but yeah, no, the way it works is, like, the goal is your goal, and if you don't make it, then that's it. The thing is that a lot of board game Kickstarters, especially in video games and so forth, will not make on their first try. But a lot of times you can relaunch, rethink things, reduce quality, get quotes from different people. There's ways that you can do it to reduce your numbers for next time, things like that. So
that you already answered my next question, which was, if you fail, can you try again?
you can. You absolutely can. You can relaunch campaigns and do it differently.
So, really, in your experience, Fleet, tell me, what is the biggest struggle in this quest to get back? Get backed?
It's just finding an audience, like completely and totally just getting people to come to your Kickstarter and just look at it, right? Because, I mean, I've been doing things like Reddit, Facebook, and Twitter as much as I possibly can. I've been doing BoardGameGeek.com, which is a really, really high traffic website for stuff like that. Various Facebook groups. I've went to local fairs and events. I'm going to a Comic-Con this weekend. But I still am struggling to get people there, you know? And it's really, that's the hardest part. And there's just so much tied up into it that you're managing in addition to that, right? The financial side of it. The having to pay for advertising, having to pay for this cost that you don't take into consideration ahead of time. It's a thing. It's fun.
So I guess my next kind of question is going to go out to both of you, even though, like, Olivia has got more experience in this, but it's really, is there anything that these crowdfunding platforms can do to help mitigate these problems, or is this strictly something that's in the hands of the creators?
Well, I hate to keep talking this whole time, I'm sorry, but...
No, it's
go
okay.
For it. You're the experienced one in this now.
Yeah.
I feel like the main issue with it has to do with what Kickstarter shows the people that browse the website and how they determine what gets views, right? So, for example, they... Now, I'm not saying it's good the way it is, but it's not perfect. So I feel like that algorithm would be the biggest help. Because right now, the way that it works is they prioritize new projects that show up on the front page of Kickstarter. New projects and projects that have gotten a lot of backers quickly. It doesn't really take into account anything like how many you get on average or anything like that. So essentially your first day on Kickstarter, there is so much hinging on that.
Really?
Because if you don't get a lot of backers in your first day, you're not going to grow that backer base much beyond that. You will some, obviously, but so really it's just so high stakes the first day, the first 2 days, that it, like, really after about the first week, you really kind of know where it's going to go. And I feel like if there's some way that they could make it easier for projects to stay afloat, to maintain their momentum, by catering views in some way. I don't really have any ideas of how they would solve the problem, but
first
it is
off,
a problem.
There is a problem, and they need to recognize that there's something that they can do, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And as you're mentioning this... Sorry to interrupt, but I went to the Kickstarter page, and the first thing that really jumps out to me that I think is potentially problematic is the first projects I all see are all funded already.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I just, for a platform that's about letting people get their projects funded or reach an audience to fund their projects, why are the first projects we see ones that are already funded? I mean,
exactly.
I can think of a business answer in that it makes the consumer feel safe.
There's clearly a business answer, because remember that if Kickstarter only gets paid from funded projects, because they take almost 10% of that Kickstarter goal. So you betcha they're going to put Dark Souls on the front page.
So more people will go ahead and fund that, so that they end up increasing that back end payment, and it kind of sucks.
It does, because also, like, they have the projects we love tag, which that you can have it where it shows those, but usually those are either already successful or clearly are going to be successful projects.
Yeah, and if you go to, like, the Discover tab. And let's say, like, I'm doing this, like, right now. And once again, first thing I see, this one is 319% funded, 427%, 143%, 87%. I mean, there's some that aren't, but for every, like, one that isn't, there's another one that is yeah. well-funded and full-time.
And there's some other websites that, I can't remember quite what it's called, but it's like saveakickstarter.com, where they like will show Kickstarters that are very close to being funded, and that's like all they show, or stuff that needs help. And I feel like Kickstarter themselves, I mean, from a creator standpoint, I wish they would do more to do that sort of thing, to show people, these are the projects that need your help the most. How about you consider them first, you know? Mm-hmm. I understand why they don't, but that's, again, talking about ways that they could mitigate the issue, that'd be definitely be one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Indiegogo is a little better, only slightly, because they have the popular near you option. Mm-hmm. And some of the projects that are popular near me, or even some page two topics for the top picks, they show projects that aren't quite funded. Like I see Brother Chicory debut album.
Yeah, I'm looking right here, and we live in the same area, so we'll get the same thing.
Yeah, but they show some projects that aren't quite there. You know, that one has 23 uh-huh. days left. It's 19%. There's one that's 51%. Yeah, you have the ones that are like 925% funded, but at least they make an effort to mix the lower funded projects in there. You know, they might be new and they can't seem to get above that hurdle, or it's just that, you know, those just don't get enough attention. So I appreciate that with Indiegogo. Yeah. I'm probably going to go with them for my funding because of these niceties that they have.
Yeah,
Kickstarter actually does the projects near you as well, but I think they only do projects in your city. Like, so they have to be very, like, very localized, and even then it's kind of like it's really easy to just scroll past and not even notice that that's a thing.
Like I'm looking at the website and trying to find it.
It's usually if you go into a specific category, it'll specifically tell you projects in this category near you, but it's kind of buried.
So the main criticism we seem to have of these crowdfunding platforms is like, and see, I look at this from a business side as well, so I'm going to try and, like, I'm going to magically pretend that someone in the higher echelon of Kickstarter is listening right now and is going to listen to my opinion, because I sympathize with them. As a business, they need not only projects to succeed so that they can make money and keep going, because what they're doing is great. It's a wonderful platform, and they need to make money to keep it going. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, there's so many things they do right.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, by showing backed projects, it makes the consumer feel like they're investing in a safe platform, that Kickstarter is safe. It also makes potential creators think that they can definitely get their stuff backed. Mm-hmm. If you go to Kickstarter and what you see is like mostly projects that are like 300% backed with 28 days to go, you stop and you think, that could be me. You know, I could be sitting here with three times the funds that I projected that I needed for my project with an entire month left to raise more funds.
Yeah.
It's like showing those success stories, and that's what it is. It's showing the success stories is very good for their brand. But they need to be very careful that they balance those success stories with the people who need the help.
Right. And that's where there's the fatal flaw. And I suppose that's also the same reason why I'm so interested in independent development, because so many people are getting swamped, not only on Kickstarter, but, you know, in the market.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, AAA titles. So many people focus on the AAAs and, oh, look, there's like Drake's Uncharted 5 coming out. Are we really going to focus on like the little guys? You know what I mean? It's just... Yeah. Oh, the new Assassin's Creed is coming out with the same exact gameplay and the same story, and it's not getting any better.
I do feel like Kickstarter, it makes it indie games more accessible to audiences, right? Like, as even before Kickstarter, like, there's so many games I never would have heard of because they never would have been made, maybe, if not for Kickstarter. So,
And it's not just games either. Software, comics, of course. All of these
things. Yes, of course.
Right.
Like, I always browse the technology section more than I do the games
really
section.
Oh, there's some really cool stuff, yeah.
Like, I like to look for, like, creative software. Like, there's this one Kickstarter that I funded, and, well, they've had a lot of bad luck in the development process because it's really hard to make software. And it was called Comics Writer. And I backed it.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and they still haven't produced their thing yet, which is the downside of Kickstarter, is they might not finish making stuff. But they had a reason, because early on, like, when they were halfway done with the development process, everything got destroyed. Their entire central location got destroyed in a mudslide.
So, wow, yeah.
Yeah, it was,
I mean,
like,
there's some
dramatic story, but
Some unforeseen things that can happen, but there's also people that take advantage of the platform, and it has happened in the gaming category in particular.
True.
Yeah.
Too many times. So it may be reaching, before too long, it may be reaching oversaturation. Too many projects, too many people wanting to back, and, you know, the more projects, the more bad eggs there are going to be. And then the less people are trustworthy of Kickstarter. So I don't think that's coming anytime soon, but I could foresee there being problems down the line.
Yep. So closing statement, kind of doing a broad, we need to move along here, closing statements on this topic. Kickstarter is a great platform and other crowdfunding places, but Kickstarter, since it has the larger amount of eyes looking at it, is arguably one of the best. Wonderful platform, even if it's not perfect. Does a lot of good, and basically go out and fund games if you want to see them.
Do it. Mm-hmm.
That's the gist.
Yeah, fund. Got to.
Even just a dollar. Just give a game a dollar.
Indie Dev is the it's the R&D team of modern gaming now. It's the experimental place where we can get really unique artistic games. That's why I like indie games, is because they're very unique. Like, look at Undertale. I think that's the best example of a very unique indie game.
That and was not thing, Kickstarted.
The thing about... I don't think so. But
Undertale was crowdfunded.
Was it?
Yes.
I didn't even pay attention.
I'm pretty sure. I think it had an explode. I'll Google this right now.
Okay.
Yeah, now
Undertale.
I'm curious.
Kickstarter. Because, I remember. Yeah, Undertale by Toby Fox. Kickstarter page right here from June 24th, 2013.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Me either.
I think it got like $45,000 backed or something like that.
That's crazy.
It was super huge.
There's so many examples. Like, the Banner Saga is one that I'm a big fan of that got kickstarted.
I love Banner Saga.
There's a ton. Like, there's a ton of really good games that have come from it.
Yeah. And I mean, like, indie games, that's where the new IPs are going to come from. Like, everybody wants, I'm tired of the same old game. It's the same stuff every time. Well, then fund a game on Kickstarter, because the best part about indie devs, they do it for the love. They do it for the passion of it. They have no one to impress. They're just trying to give you a great game with no strings attached, you know, and they just need the help getting over the hump.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, the thing is, if you want more diversity in games, different kinds of games, whatever, you gotta help make it happen, and that's what Kickstarter is for. So
yep. So there's your public service announcement of the week.
it's literally the same announcement I make to everyone about everything dealing with games.
Go and fund your indie devs. They matter too.
Yeah.
Now let's move into the closing. I just want to say thank you both for joining me, and now plug your stuff. Olivia, you start. Tell them all about Barricade Games and all that jazz, and where to find you. Social media, websites.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Barricade Games has got a website, barricadegames.com. We do occasional blogs talking about our games. We've got some, like I said, we've got a digital and tabletop game going on right now. There's information there about that. You can also follow Barricade Games on Twitter and Facebook. We're everywhere almost. Not really just those two places, but, you know,
that's close pretty enough. Much everywhere. Because no one goes to Google Plus.
Yeah, no way.
I do.
Why?
No.
I mean, we have a Google Plus and we haven't used it in a year. No one noticed.
Yeah, I know. Jeez. They get you sometimes.
Corey, where can everyone find what you do with the Nerd Queue and all of that wonderful stuff?
You can find me on Facebook under Nerd Queue, Twitter, the Nerd Queue, Instagram, the Nerd Queue. If you go to a social media platform like Snapchat and you put in the Nerd Queue, you'll find it. That's literally how I get around. You can also follow me at Corey Clyett, Clyett, if you want to check out some rants and raves inside my own head about moving to Fargo. Pretty intense. Pretty intense.
As a Fargo goer, I can understand rants, especially.
I love it. Like, I love being here. It's a great place. Here. Yeah. Oh, it's yeah, a great definitely. Place.
Sometimes people try my patience, but it is a great place to live.
Yeah, it's and pretty of legit.
Of course, if you're listening to this, make sure you head over and also give the Boomburst a follow on Twitter. Talk to us. Let us know if you like this kind of episode topic. Because if you like it, we'll definitely do this more. I really enjoyed this. Seems like both of you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I had a blast.
It was fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you like this, you know, go on, show support for the episode just like you would for Kickstarter. Retweet us. Do all that stuff because I have no shame in shameless self-promotion on my own show as my specialty.
You got to.
Yeah, and if you guys want us to do different topics and different episodes, just shoot us a tweet at the Boomburst. Talk to us. We're free and we're open. And with that, I just want to do a final thank you, Corey. Thank you, Olivia. It's been a wonderful episode.
Oops. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes. Anyway, I've been Dozer.
I've been Fleet.
And I've been Corey.
Mm-hmm. And you've been listening to the Boomburst. Thank you all, and have a wonderful rest of your day. Bye-bye.